say no.
Too many questions. We know it will be dangerous. We also know we're strong. So yes. Now I am asking you to put yourselves more at risk. For Lyra. For the children we have lost. But mostly for ourselves. I am the Western King, and I'm asking you to ready yourselves to travel north. Ready yourselves to fight. And ready yourselves to bring our children home.
Welcome to King Folklore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building and sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, our shared love of our favorite stories will help make us family also.
For our first season, we're discussing His Dark Materials, the HBO BBC television show. Today, we're going to go through the episode, talk about our reflections on this world. So if you haven't watched His Dark Materials, episode 3, titled The Spies, please stop. Watch it and come back when you finish.
In addition, we will be discussing adult themes and topics on this podcast. So hide the kids under the sink, behind the good china, because the magisterium is hot on our trail. This is episode 3.
We open with Lyra screaming in the back of a van. She's been captured. The van stops and a fight between gobblers and masked men and their demons ensue. As the van door opens, one of the masked men reveals himself. It's Tony Costa.
Yeah, Tony Costa.
Tony Costa to the rescue.
I love him. Well, anyway, he's like, she's totally surprised, which is amazing because she can't figure out how the hell did he get here? Is he a gobbler? What's going on? Like, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. Mrs. Coulter arrives to Jordan College where she tells her minions, and she has a whole lot of minions, to find something heretical or illegal.
Heresy.
She rolls up on the master, who is looking extremely relaxed in this moment.
Yo, zero fucks. Like, he is like, he's fine. He's like, oh, you know what? I would expect this from Boreal, but I thought you'd be a little different. But okay, go ahead, search what you want.
Exactly. He's basically like, why are you talking to me? You're the one who lost Lyra.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
In this conversation, Mrs. Coulter challenges Scholastic Sanctuary. It is about privileged, tired old men talking about tired old things in a tired old way, she says. Basically, like the United States government.
Exactly like the government. Oh my gosh.
One of her minions brings her books about how to read an alethiometer, which apparently are extremely illegal. She uses this as leverage to ask where Lyra is, and the master reveals that the device is with Lyra. It had arrived with her when Asriel dropped her off. He tells Mrs. Coulter she basically can't touch him because she's already done everything she can do to him, and that Lyra isn't there. So at this point, she basically like tear up his whole study, and the master is sitting there.
Calm as hell, like still calm. And the wild part is that he's like, he's totally, when he's like, yo, you've already done your worst. He's like daring her basically, like, go ahead, do what you want to do. You've already done your worst. And he's styling her too. Like, he's like, listen, I had her for 12 years. You had her for 2 days or so. Like it's crazy. How did you lose her that quick?
I know.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. Super good.
Yeah. The master gets, with each episode, the master gets like a little bit more gangster. Like, he's a little bit like, Boreal already rolled up on him. So now he's like, yeah, okay, whatever. What are you going to do to me?
He does not care.
He does not care at this point.
No.
So in the next scene, Lyra is being taken to the Egyptian caravan by Tony. Tony tells her that all the Egyptians from all over have come to London to find the missing children. Tony then lies to his mother about he just lies to her about how he found Lyra. And Ma Costa, again, for the parenting win, is like, I know you're lying. This story doesn't add up. So then he basically tries to change the subject by saying, well, we caught one of the gobblers. So in the next scene, Lord Fa and Father Coram question Lyra about what she knows. They tell her that she must stay with them to be safe. Lyra protesting that she doesn't know them and she really needs to find Roger. Also, Lyra is super smart because these people have lost a lot of children and they're now like, oh, you'll be safe with us.
Oh my gosh.
Father Coram tells her that she's always been important to the Egyptians ever since she was a baby. Lyra asks if this is because Lord Asriel is her father, which surprises both Lord Fa and Father Coram. Lord Fa responds, no, you're special on your own account. And he says that they will work to earn her trust. Meanwhile, Lord Boreal is at the magisterium being told that Mrs. Coulter's raid at Jordan College was not a good idea, that it violated Scholastic Sanctuary. And, you know, the magisterium is kind of like, why is she doing all of these things that are bringing attention to us? The official from the magisterium tells Boreal that there's a rumor that the Egyptians have Lyra. Once again, the magisterium has more information than everyone else in this show, and I would just like to know who the snitch is.
I gotta know. Like, this person is out here just telling it all, giving it all the state secrets up. Like, Tekashi is out. He's Tekashiing the whole game. Like, he's like, listen, it was him and her and him and her and her and him. He don't care, right? He just doesn't care.
I never thought we were talking about Tekashi on our
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, that is, like, for sure, like, hilarious. There's a couple of things about the end of this episode, I mean, the end of this segment that I want to talk about. One, I really, really, really enjoy that Lord Fa is a better dad at this point than Lord Asriel. He doesn't go with the everyone is special. He goes, no, you're special on your own account. Like, we just, like, yes, Lord Asriel is our person, and you're also special. So I'm going to go with, like, Lord Fa for the win on that. I love the parenting, Ma Costa, love it. But I really, really, really love in that scene with Lord Boreal, where the guy is talking to him about, you know, how they broke Scholastic Sanctuary, and some rando, it walks by him, and he runs up on him, like, he runs up on him while he's talking to the other dude. I'm like, Boreal is just, like, all about this fighting life, and he gets super close. This guy has, like, magical breath. He's, like, in his personal space, up inside of it. It's crazy. This guy has great dental hygiene. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Boreal, and I have to say, and we can talk about this more later, but up to this point, Boreal and Mrs. Coulter have been the people on the show who just have no fear, right? They're just, yeah, like, up in everyone's face. Like, they act like they're untouchable. They're constantly telling the magisterium to fall back. And it's nice to see in this scene that the master is like, I'm not afraid of you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you messed up. Why are you mad at me? So I appreciated that. I was actually clapping when the master was like, you can't do anything else to me. You've already, yeah, done your worst.
Yeah. No, it was great. That's a great line. It's like, you've done your worst. Go ahead. Tear it up. Like, tear stuff up. Like, she has rage attacks. You just tear shit up. Okay, cool. Other people tear shit up. She tears shit up. It's crazy. I don't know. Anyway, so Pan and Lyra continue to figure out how to read the alethiometer, but they put it away when Ma Costa calls Lyra to help her cook. She's showing her some tricks in the kitchen, Benihana style. Ma Costa tells Lyra that she can do whatever she wants to be and that it's her choice. Boreal returns to 2019 London, and in his typical creepy way, he looks around and finds a boot on his car. They've escalated now. No more parking tickets. We're booting up your shit. Like, that's what it is. All right? Dude, you didn't pay 2 parking tickets. This is what it is.
The London police will have their money.
They're,
yeah,
not They're not for these games. They're not fucking around. Okay? Back with the Egyptians, Father Coram speaks with Lyra about Mrs. Coulter and talks about her golden monkey demon. He tells her that when a demon settles, it will tell her who she really is. When a person's demon settles they don't care for, that it could make them discontented. Father Coram takes Lyra to see the captured gobbler. Benjamin is one of the Egyptians' boys who is questioning him. Back in our world, Boreal has figured out how to get the boot off his car super fast. How?
Real
I have
fast.
No idea. Real fast. Faster than I've had a boot on my car. That shit can take a while. Like, I can't, it's like, he was en route to Thomas. Like, this is the most magical thing in the episode, probably. It's crazy. Thomas tells Boreal that Grumman actually through facial recognition, matches a colonel in the Royal Marines. His name is John Parry, and he was born in our world. Boreal is perplexed because Grumman has a demon. Grumman went missing in Alaska, and he left his wife and child behind. His wife has a long-term history of mental health problems. Thomas asks Boreal if this search for Grumman is for himself or for the organization he works for. He hands over the information to Boreal, who immediately texts someone who he needs to meet. Back in Lyra's world, Benjamin got some information out of the gobblers. He learns that they are taking the children north. Both Lyra and Benjamin want to get more information from Mrs. Coulter's apartment, but Fata Coram forbids it, saying if Benjamin is captured, Mrs. Coulter will know everything that they're doing. The authorities raid the Egyptian boats, looking for Lyra. Ma Costa is successful in hiding her, and we learn that these raids are illegal, but apparently happen often, and Ma Costa asks, what are you looking for this time? Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot in this. So, can I just say... Boreal is very casual with Thomas, his otherworld minion, who is basically like a really good hacker. Is that basically what
he's got all of the info on the best hackers, the best spies, and the fucking waffle fries in our world. Like, he knows where all of them are. He's got a cone of waffle fries chilling. It's great. I love this guy. Yeah, he knows. Thomas is apparently really good at facial recognition software, machine learning. He's got it all down. He's good.
Yeah. And then also in this scene, I have to say that when the authorities raid the Egyptian boats, first of all, I want to just acknowledge that they're the demon dogs that are like sniffing. That was pretty cool. And I'm like, is that a job you just get because you're demon settled as a dog? Like, it's pretty cool. But also, this part where they raid the Egyptian boats is just like a little bit too much like our world.
Under whose jurisdiction do you board these boats? Under Article 3 of the Water Course Bill, they shut him down. Here's a picture.
Yeah, where the fuck's really the girl? And it's pretty upsetting because Ma Costa is like, can you look for my son? Like, my son Billy's been missing. You need to be looking for him instead of looking for this little girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's you know, it that the tension of the guard punching through the back of the cupboard, like right there where all the dishes are, and he's punching, trying to like see where it is, and just in that moment, they'd be like, she's not here, and calls them off. And Pan again is like for the win here, talking about, don't even breathe, Lyra. Don't breathe. Like, don't let any noise come out of your mouth. Like, trying to like warn her to just, hey, don't be crazy. Let's like calm down. And it's like her conscience again, reminding her, stay still. Don't fuck it up. So
yeah,
I really dug that part, the tension that was built.
Yeah, I actually was a little bit. There was a moment where I was like, are they gonna find her? You know, I definitely thought that that was possible. You realize, I mean, I don't think we've gotten to this part yet, but you realize how long she was down there. Like, she was down there for a minute.
For a while.
Which is a little upsetting for a little girl who's on the run and also just was captured by gobblers and was in the back of this van who just came from Mrs. Coulter, who also was basically a prisoner at Jordan College as well. She just doesn't, she lives in fear.
And I think this is, like, in this block that we just went over, I think that these are some of the things that really are highlighted. So in the beginning, right, before we even get to the raid, we see that Lyra's kind of thinking about leaving. She's thinking about escaping, even after having all of the conversation. And she's been, you know, disappointed by Mrs. Coulter, disappointed by Lord Asriel, disappointed even in some regard by the master, because all she sees from her perspective is he tried to poison her uncle and has been told numerous times not to trust him. And, you know, Pan, who says to her, I think we can trust them. And I never felt that way about her. And that gives you like a super duper cool insight in, because Pan is basically Lyra's innermost thoughts of her spirit. And he basically gives a great insight that she never really felt comfortable with the Mrs. Coulter situation either. Like, and so you see that, and I think like that sets up these other scenes and these other things, these interactions she has with Fa Decorum and Ma Costa in the kitchen and on the top of the boat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Ma Costa talking to her about how she can be whatever she wants and it's her own choice is just such a stark contrast to Mrs. Coulter saying, I can make you extraordinary if you let me mold you. Mm-hmm. It's a real difference. I mean, Ma Costa is constantly, you know, winning here at parenting compared to some of the other adults.
All the time. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think Fa Decorum as well. I think, like, what he talks to her at the top of the boat after that scene, right? And he's speaking to her and he's talking about, you know, not understanding why Mrs. Coulter's demon settled as a monkey, but he never understood demons. He couldn't have ever imagined that Tony Costa's demon was going to settle as a hawk. And then he starts talking about, you know, what it means for your demon to settle, that it really shows, you know, basically who you're going to be and who you are. And she's not really sold yet because she just had this whole pep talk about you can be whatever you want. And this is where Fa Decorum balances that and I think really shows her with, like, dream but with your feet on the ground. There will come a point where your character will be set, where your demon will show who you truly are. And it doesn't mean you're not going to dream about maybe being something else. Some people want their demons to be lions and they end up as poodles. Like, such good life advice. Like, she's starting to get some mentors that she can, like, look to. It's like, don't just think that you're just going to be able to change all the time, do whatever you want. Yes, have the explorer spirit. Yes, think that you can do whatever you want, but also keep your feet on the ground and remember that at some point, what you do will show the world who you are.
Mm-hmm. I really like this little bit of foreshadowing too about Tony Costa's demon, mm-hmm. Where he says, I never would have thought that Tony Costa's demon would have settled as a hawk. You know, hawks are birds of prey and they are, they take risk. They are, you know, they sort of symbolize birds that are at the top of the the bird food chain. And I like that later in this episode, we see that Tony is very brave and he makes good decisions in the moment based on his intuition or just like knowing when something is going to be dangerous or safe. So I like that Tony takes risks and he's very brave. And I think that this is a little nod to the fact that you don't see that outwardly. That the reason that Fa Decorum is just surprised that his demon settled as a hawk is that Tony doesn't really come off as being super brave or taking big risks. And he's kind of stealthy about it. I mean, he lies to his mom and says, oh, yeah, we were out with the boys getting some supplies, but they were really on this mission. And that decision to go on this mission actually helps them both capture Gobbler and also save Lyra.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he definitely is winning in this episode as a hero, as a heroic figure. And let's talk about the dismount of this conversation, though, with Fa Decorum and Lyra. Like, he goes into all this life advice. He gives really solid feet on the ground, you know, like, hey, I wouldn't change a hair on my demon's head, you know, because basically you have to be happy with who you are and have gratitude for what you have and, you know, have contentment in your life. And then he goes to, hey, kid, nice chat. Want to come see us torture somebody?
Yeah. not really great.
No.
Yeah, it was like, what?
Yeah. Want to see the guy who took you? Like, okay, cool. And then, like, you see, like, in the midst of a torture session, like, hey, she's looking. And this is where you see that icy coldness inside Lyra that, you know, kind of scared the master in the beginning, right? Where she's looking and he's all like, is this okay for you, Lyra? And she turns and she says, he would have done worse to me. He was planning on doing worse to Roger and Billy. So she's like, I'm good with this. Like, torture this guy. I want to know what he's doing and I want to win. Like, and this is the second time in the episode we see this little darkness. The first time was in the kitchen with Ma Costa where she's saying, well, you know, at least it's a start to us beating them. So she's real. She's got steel in her belly.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I think we're starting to see that defiance that came off as like brattiness at Jordan College. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see it come through as resilience in Lyra and determination.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay. So we're back at the flat. Mrs. Coulter is sitting in Lyra's old bedroom and her demon is creepily staring at her from the doorway. She basically tears the bedroom apart as a golden monkey closes the door. I'm not sure why we got this scene. This is the beginning of Mrs. Coulter kind of coming apart at the seams. Back in the Egyptian caravan, Ma Costa lets Lyra out. And as I said earlier, it seems like Lyra was there for a while. Like they waited for the police to leave for quite some time before they let her out. As soon as she's out, she runs to the shore. And Ma Costa follows her. And Lyra and her have this exchange where Lyra is expressing basically what any child would in this situation. She feels like she's not safe anywhere. All the adults are lying to her. Mrs. Coulter will never stop looking for her. That's been made pretty clear. Lyra wants to know why. And Ma Costa is very apprehensive. She's like, I can't really tell you. It's not my place. You know, you're better off not knowing certain things. And then Lyra basically says, I'm bored with that explanation. Mm-hmm. Can you please give me more information? Treat me, you know, you want me to trust you. You have to treat me like a person as well. And then Ma Costa lays out Lyra's history. And it's pretty upsetting, actually. So it's revealed that Mrs. Coulter is her mother, which I think we kind of could understand after seeing her outburst last episode about.
Yeah, she was on some, like, he's a failure as a man and a failure as a father.
Shocking everyone in the room. So Ma Costa explains that when Lord Asriel was a young man, he was an explorer. He met Mrs. Coulter, but Mrs. Coulter was already married. They got together. Lyra was the result of their affair. And once Mrs. Coulter's husband, whose name is Edward, saw Lyra, he understood that that was not his child, that it was Lord Asriel's child. He tried to track Lyra down to kill her. Lord Asriel bought Lyra to Egyptian nurse for safekeeping. The nurse tried to hide Lyra, but Mr. Coulter found her, and him and Lord Asriel had to fight. During the fight, Edward Coulter was killed. So it's a little bit vague here. It says he was killed. I'm assuming that means Lord Asriel killed him, but I'm not sure. It seems like it also, maybe something else happened. Maybe it was an accidental death, but it seems like, you know, he was killed in this fight. Mrs. Coulter basically was broken from this. You know, she had to live with the shame of everyone knowing she had an affair. Her husband died as a result of it. And Ma Costa tells Lyra the law didn't really know how to react to this, that Mr. Coulter had a right to go after Lord Asriel because, you know, the patriarchy is alive and well.
Yeah, to quote him, he goes, that a husband has a right to defend his violated wife. Like, I'm like, what is going on in this world? Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But the law also protects Lord Asriel because, you know, Edward Coulter broke into his home and tried to kill Lyra. So I guess as a compromise, they stripped Asriel of all of his land and money and sent Lyra to live in a nunnery. She stayed there until the Great Flood, and then Asriel kidnapped her in the middle of the night and took her to Jordan College. So Lyra very quickly figures out that Ma Costa was the Egyptian nurse and wanted to keep her safe. Ma Costa asked her in what was like very moving for another chance to protect her. And Lyra goes back with her. She said another bomb dropped on her, that one of her parents isn't what they seem. And she trusts Ma Costa because she's tried to protect her once before.
Can we just talk about this segment before we move on to the rest of this?
Of course,
I was so moved by this scene. This scene, like, it's set up so well with all the conversations with the two conversations we referenced earlier in the episode. And also with what happens in the kitchen, that you can feel that warmth in their relationship, and you're trying to spot it. And in reading, I know we are dealing with the show, but in reading the books, one of the things that I thought, I was wondering how they were going to bring back around, was Lyra's relationship to the Egyptians and why it's so important for them not only to find Billy, but to be going on this mission that at the same time that she's going out. And one of the central parts of that is this piece that Ma Costa shares, is that she is the nurse that was caring for her. And in the book, it talks about her being the wet nurse. Like, she literally breastfed this girl. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because Billy and her are the same age. Her mother wasn't able to see her. This is like one of her children coming back home. And the exchange of her just being totally disarmed and saying, I have to tell this girl that's her mother, because she was tired of like trying to keep up this false pretense of not really knowing her the way that she does. So beautiful and really well done in this episode.
Yeah, and I really understood why Lyra believed that Ma Costa wanted to protect her, because she seemed so genuine. Like, I failed once before and I'm not going to fail again.
Yeah. Super beautiful. I loved this scene, and I loved this reveal, the way that it was done. And because it's done very differently in the books, where it's just all in one scene. And I was questioning the reveal of Asriel on the show in the back of my mind. I was like, just, man, I wish they would have like done it closer to the books. But the way that that set up this scene was so beautiful. I'm a believer. You won me over. Yep. So.
Yeah. I thought this was really well done too.
Yeah.
So let's go visit her mom, because we just had this story about how, you know, Ma Costa tells Lyra the story of her parents, and she says it with a lot of empathy for Mrs. Mm-hmm. Coulter. And then in the very next scene, we see that Mrs. Coulter is really struggling. She's not doing well at all. She's hanging out on the ledge of her apartment with a drink in hand and walking along the edge.
She's doing a field sobriety test right now on the ledge of the balcony with the golden monkey looking on. And he's like, he talk about shook. Is he scared? Is he scared for her, or is he scared for himself? Because we know if she dies, he dies. Like, what happens? What's going on?
The gold monkey does look concerned when she almost slips. I mean, this is also just a callback to what she said earlier about heights and having the urge to jump.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad. And then in the very next second, she takes out these two devices that look like little bugs. And we know that she's sending them off to search for Lyra. She's got these two devices. So I'm like, I was kind of feeling bad for you, but now you're doing something super creepy.
Yeah, it's like when you first see her, you feel totally bad for her, because she's like, oh my God, she's going to die. The golden monkey looks scared. She's like walking with a glass of wine. And there's a little kid, like a little baby dress that obviously was something she purchased a while ago, because it's way too small to fit Lyra currently. And a little box. And you're thinking, oh, she's really sad about not having her daughter with her anymore. And then she goes and does that. And then you're like, golly, man, this lady, you can't feel any sort of like kindness towards this lady, because she will, again, stick the knife in when you let your guard down.
Exactly. And so I just want to wrap up the sequence, but I want to talk about both of Lyra's parents in a moment. So remind me to circle back to that.
Okay.
So back in our world, in 2019, Boreal meets up with another shady person.
He got him on
Boreal
deck.
Just like knows all the shady people. Everyone. In 2019 London. It's incredible.
He's got his ear to the streets. He knows what's going on.
So he asks this shady guy to watch over Grumman's family. As in the previous scene, we learned that Grumman's name is actually John Parry, and that he has a son and a wife. And so he gives a picture of the teenage boy who is Grumman's son to the shady guy, who I'm assuming is like some kind of detective. I don't know what he is. And basically says, I need you to keep watch and report back to me.
Yeah, and it's so that whole sequence is so full. Like, we've been talking about how full it is, and we just have to accept at this point that they're moving at breakneck speed. And, I mean, we find out that, officially, that Mrs. Coulter is Lyra's mom. We find out that Ma Costa is the person who cared for her before she was taken out of her care because of what happened. We find out why Lord Asriel showed up in the front of Jordan College in the middle of a flood, knocking on the master's door. We find out now that Grumman, the head, the skull, the man, the myth, the legend, is possibly a guy who was like from our world, then went over to their world and got a demon. Like, this guy Thomas is laying out his own Reddit theories. Like, listen, what if What if this guy went over here to your world and got a demon after? So we're finding out a lot of information, and that Grumman may possibly have a family in the modern world, which is...
Yeah. And we also, you know, that picture of that young boy is clearly important, or they wouldn't have showed it to us. So I think we're getting an introduction to possibly a new character who's going to be important.
Yeah. And I think Boreal, it's obvious in the way that he's speaking. He's crossed into this world a while. He even has a really scary and creepy exchange with Thomas, where he kind of just says to him, he says, you know, why have you never followed me over into this world? Why? Because you're scared. And he basically calls him out, says, you know, yeah, I was scared, but I mastered my fear. And I've never found anyone who was like as brave as me in crossing between the worlds until I saw Stanislav Grumman. And he is like never going to like let it go until he finds out what he's up to and what he's doing, because he feels as if he's found his match in someone who's not scared to cross these worlds. And maybe that's why this guy has so many freaking minions. He's been here for a while.
Mm-hmm. It's clear that he, I mean, we knew that this was not Boreal's first time crossing over, because obviously he had a car and it wasn't an iPhone, but you know, I got another look at his phone. It's clearly an Android of some kind.
It was an Android. He got the S8. I was wrong. I was thinking it was like, you know, the XS, whatever. No, it was a little Android. He's definitely out here living his best Android life.
So we know that he's crossed into the world before, and we did question like how frequently, how recently, but it's clear that he has contacts, you know. It's not just Thomas. It seemed like from the, you know, the second episode that perhaps Boreal only knew Thomas from crossing over, but it's clear that he has some kind of standing in our world as well. So to circle back to Lyra's parentage, do you feel differently about Azriel now? Then does Azriel seem like less of a terrible person now that we have his backstory?
No. No, he does not. Not to me. I know some people will feel differently. I do not feel any differently, if I'm being honest and authentic. He stood up to the husband and killed, like, you know, the dude. So he's a murderer now. He's an adulterer. And he also is a dad who has left his daughter with all kinds of issues because he left her and abandoned her. She has abandonment issues, and she knows nothing about her story, nothing about her history. And he's unleashed for all of the things that he thinks he's done. When she was getting killed, when Mrs. Coulter was getting killed about the adultery and the man having the right to defend his violated wife and him having the right to kill people, Azriel was ghost. He went missing. Like, where is he? You don't hear that in the story. You don't hear him standing up for Mrs. Coulter. Maybe that's why she's bitter. That rage and that bitterness has now been unleashed on a whole freaking community of people in the taking of kids and creating this whole plot. So, no, I don't feel a bit different about Azriel. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, and I don't either. But I did feel like the story put both him and Mrs. Coulter in a different light.
Yes.
That, you know, obviously some trauma has created the people that they are. And what Mrs. Coulter said about him in the previous episode makes more sense now. Not only does she feel like he failed as a father, but he failed as a man as well. And I think that that's from his lack of effort in protecting her. Yeah. And I guess I did feel sorry for Mrs. Coulter at first. She obviously endured something terrible. But I'm also suspicious about both of these parents, because when you think about how they're behaving, I'm wondering how much of their concern for Lyra is about parental love, and how much of it is because they know that she's special. Yeah. And know the prophecy. Obviously, we know that Azriel must know this prophecy because he spent much of his time in the North. I think it's impossible that he wouldn't know that they were talking about his own child at this point. And Mrs. Coulter obviously knows that she's very important too. You could see that when the master told her that Lyra had the alethiometer, that she was alarmed. And so I guess I'm a little bit torn about whether I think that these two are acting in part because they love her, or are they trying to protect her because they think she's almost like a weapon of some kind? So I don't know. I think it's something to watch and think about. I don't quite know where that part of the story is going to lead. I mean, I'm pretty much abandoning what I know from the books at this point, just because they've made so many changes. And also because, like, Mrs. Coulter is much more monstrous, I think, on screen than she was in the books. So I'm going to watch this and see what comes through. But I think that this story does shed new light on these two characters, for sure.
Yeah, and I agree. I totally agree. I was way more sympathetic to Mrs. Coulter, which is, like, in this episode, because I, you know, to walk around in a society with shame, and it lets you understand why why she has the self-loathing. Remember, we talk so much about her not liking herself and how she treats her demon, and she's been shamed, like, for years. So I felt a lot more sympathetic to her than I even felt to Asriel, because I felt like he was still getting away with murder. He still came back and did all this stuff and then still got that check and ran back to the north to go explore new worlds, leaving his kid behind. And I think both of them are kind of showing how, first of all, we're in the middle of this whole thing is now boiling down to a family court domestic dispute. Pretty wild.
Basically. And then
something is like, yo, mom's is mad, dad is mad, and they're taking everyone's involved. And I also feel like when I'm listening to what's going on, it just seems as if, to your point, the parents are more concerned with the world they inhabit and their image within the world than they are with the child that they brought into the world, who obviously is showing us she has tons of special qualities and may in fact be the person who is meant to, like, fulfill these prophecies that are from the north.
Right.
So, I mean, moving on, we'll go back to the Egyptians. The Egyptians gather for a meeting, and Lord Fa tells them that 27 children have been taken. A man named Raymond fucking Van Garrett. God, this guy. He's that guy that always takes the wind out of your sails and always kills something in a meeting. You're in a meeting, you have a great idea.
He's like, no, we can't do that.
No, we can't do that. Why would we do that? Why don't just, like, put that person out? Don't do that. Fucking Raymond Van Garrett. Anyway, here we go. A man named Raymond Van Garrett then says that the reason the police are harassing them is because they are harboring Lyra, who is a fugitive. The crowd turns on Lyra until she pleads with them and tells them that they have to stop Mrs. Coulter and do with her what they will, because she's never going to stop taking their children. Vada Quorum says that they will go north and ask the witches for their support. Benjamin mumbles to himself a little bit like that. They can find out now. Vada Quorum ain't having it. He cuts him off. He don't even want to start with the whole mob there about being able to steal the papers. Lord Fa, he's like, no, listen, I already said no, shut up, right? He's like, suns him over in the corner, like, listen, bro, stop. So Lord Fa gives a rousing speech to the crowd, love this speech, who cheers him on as he says they will fight back against the gobblers. Even Raymond, this guy, seems convinced. Benjamin and Tony, basically, hold on, before we even go on to Benjamin and Tony, even Raymond does seem convinced. And I like at the end when Lord Fa styles on him and he's like, too many questions. I am king.
Yeah, going to really the north. Does. He's like, so I'm the king. I know I was trying to hold this meeting collaboratively, but at the end of the day, this is not a democracy.
Yeah. I am the Western king. That is it, yo. We're going north. He's like, raise the taxes. Get me the money. Bring me your best warriors. I'm like, yes, finally, we're getting some king moves out of Lord Fa. I'm hyped right now. And so that scene goes down. And then after his speech, we see Ben is not taking no for an answer. He sneaks off with Tony, off on a boat in the middle of the night, unbeknownst to all the adults. But Lyra sees Tony as he's leaving, and she asks him what's going on, and he tells Lyra that they're going to Mrs. Coulter's apartment. Lyra then tells him where the plans are inside her apartment. Lyra continues to play along with the lithiometer. It finally moves when Lyra makes her mind go blank. Pan teases her that she should make her mind go blank more often. I love this guy, Pan. I love him. Benjamin and Tony arrive at Mrs. Coulter's flat, just as Ma Costa is waking up to realize that Tony is missing. They successfully break into the scaling of the elevator shaft, and they also get into the study where the plans are while the golden monkey watches them from the vent. Tony escapes through Lyra's room, but Benjamin's demon is shot by Mrs. Coulter, seemingly incapacitating both Benjamin and the demon. The demon attacks Mrs. Coulter, but is subdued by the golden monkey. Mrs. Coulter beats Tony while the golden monkey beats his demon, then threatens to kill the demon. Benjamin makes a run for it and says he will not betray his family. Never will he betray his family, and then jumps to his death down the elevator shaft. The golden monkey is disturbed that Benjamin's demon disappears, and let's pour one out for our homie Benjamin. Pour one out for Benjamin. Pour it out for Benji.
He goes out like a real G here. I was just like, oh wow, okay, Benjamin. I mean, she says to him, "There's no way out." And he's like, I beg to differ, man.
Yeah. He's like, I'm out. I'm going to die. I'd rather die than allow you to find out any of the plans or torture me. You're going to kill me anyway. I might as well kill myself. That's it. Yeah. Went out like a G. I love it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just say for our listeners, suicide is never cool.
Never cool.
But I will say that given Father Coram's original take that if Mrs. Coulter captured Benjamin, then she would know everything, I think that Benjamin took that to heart. He wasn't going to let her torture him to the point where he gave up the location of Lyra and told her what the Egyptians were up to. I like this scene in part because it shows Tony's fast thinking. Like, Tony booked it out of there. He was not going to get caught. He also manages to sneak out of some paper with him. But we see this oath that Tony took at the beginning of the series where he says that he pledges basically his life to protecting the ways of the Egyptian people. This was Benjamin following through on that oath, which we have to assume that when his demon settled, he took as well. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a nice like closing of the loop to see just how serious the Egyptian people take that oath.
Yep.
And then the other thing from this scene that I could not get over, I mean, I watched this scene a couple of times, and the golden monkey will definitely be paying more attention next time homegirl's out on the ledge, because he was very upset when the demon literally turned to dust.
Yeah. He was like, yo, wait a minute. If that, oh shit, like, I could die.
You kind of see like the little golden monkey, like, thoughts in his head being processed, and he's like, wait a minute, this could be me. So I'm just gonna wager that all the alcohol in Mrs. Coulter's apartment is gonna go missing. He's not gonna take any more risks with us.
You find like 20 decanters of wine in the freaking vent. That's it. You're like, nope, that's it. It's nope, not happening.
Yeah, he's not going out like Benjamin's demon. What kind of bird was Benjamin's demon?
I was trying to make that out. I don't know. I'm not sure. It looked like, it definitely is a bird of some sort. It didn't seem like a hawk. It wasn't like a hawk like Tony's. So I'm not sure. We'd have to look that up and like tell our listeners at another date. What did you think it was? What did it look like to you?
It looked also like a hawk to me. It's definitely beautiful. I actually will look this up because I'm curious now. It was quite a beautiful bird, and I thought maybe it was also a hawk. Maybe what we're supposed to assume is that the Egyptian warriors, or at least the ones who are kind of outside of the regulated Egyptian fighters have hawk demons.
I just looked it up. It is a hawk. In fact, it was a hawk. Yeah, both of their demons are hawks. Yep.
Yeah, this was. It was absolutely a beautiful bird for sure. I really also liked that it was not going to be easily taken down.
This
demon was like, oh, you think I'm out? Nope, might have been shot, but it flew right back in Mrs. Coulter's face. So just like Benjamin, his demon is extremely brave.
Yeah, and he's very brave, and it's a real loss, man, because he really was growing on me this episode. I was like, yes, like, this guy is for real. He's not playing around. His spirit, his energy was, well, he seemed like the muscle in that family. So we're going to miss him.
Yeah, yeah.
R.I.P. Benjamin.
Yeah, poor Benjamin. So back at the caravan, Ma Costa is very upset because Tony has not returned. And Lyra feels guilty about this. She, you know, she told Tony and Benjamin that Mrs. Coulter had plans for what was going to happen north. And Father Coram tries to comfort her. And she shows him the alethiometer because now she feels that she can trust him. He tells her that he never thought he would see one again because the magisterium took all of them years ago. And he tries to explain to her how to use it. So from what I can gather from what he said was that you ask a question using the three hands and pointing to symbols. And then the alethiometer responds by turning one of the other hands to give you your answer. He also lets her know that it takes years and years of study, and you also need books to interpret it. Lyra, however, is determined to find Tony and Benjamin, so she uses the dials to ask where Tony is. The hand lands on an hourglass of a skull on top of it, which she interprets to mean that Benjamin is dead. Just then, she runs upstairs to tell Father Coram what she's discovered, and just then, Pan and Lyra are attacked by one of the tracker devices that Mrs. Coulter sent after her. Father Coram is able to capture one of the devices, but the other device escapes, presumably to tell Mrs. Coulter where Lyra is. At that point, he's like, we have to leave right away. And luckily, in that moment, Tony arrives home. He shows his mother that they have a list of the children that have been taken, which she freaks out because obviously Billy's name is on the list. And he lets everyone know that Benjamin is dead. And also Tony, just to note, Tony feels really, he feels bad that he ran away, that he didn't stay behind to help Benjamin, which is pretty upsetting. But from our point of view, we know that he didn't have a choice. I mean, he would have been captured as well.
For sure. Would have, there's no way he's making it out of there if he doubles back to try to save Benjamin. That's just not happening. I mean, could the two of them maybe overtook Mrs. Coulter? Debatable. She did hit him with the karate chop a couple of times. You know what
and
I mean?
And she had a firearm. You know, she had the golden monkey, a firearm. I don't know. I think Tony did the right thing because at least they walked out with some information.
I agree. I totally agree.
In the next scene, Lord Fa is pretty upset about Benjamin's death, and he's wondering if they can recover the body. Father Coram says no. At this point, they can't go back, and he tells Lord Fa that they have to keep moving and that Lyra can read the alethiometer, and it makes her more valuable than any warrior that they could ever have. So they set sail north. Lyra considers throwing the spy fly, which is what those devices were called, into the sea. Ma Costa once again comes to her and tells her she shouldn't do that, that it's a testament to how much her mother is desperate to see her, be it for good reasons or bad, since she took such a big risk, because spy flies are illegal, even to the magisterium is afraid of them, she says in this moment. Boreal, who apparently has crossed again,
this guy
strolls into Mrs. Coulter's flat.
Relaxed, she's like he owns
very
the
relaxed, like he yeah. has a
like
key.
He's been
I mean,
a few times, like he got a toothbrush in the bathroom. Like he's been staying away while the babies was here. You know, that's it.
Exactly. I was like, what is the relationship of these two? I need to know. She also doesn't make a big deal about the fact that she's there. She's sort of just like lounging on the couch, and she's very comfortable in his presence. Wow. The two of them consider their circumstances. He's basically like, we're screwed. Like everything is going bad. And she's like, no, we still have a card to play. And just as she says that, one of the spy flies, the one that escaped from the Egyptians, arrives at her flat. And that is the end of the episode.
Yeah, you know what's so great about the way that they ended that episode also was it's you don't think about it till the episode ends, but they give you this little, like, you know, Easter egg in the beginning. When Tony and Benjamin and all the Egyptian boys show up and they go after the gobblers, one of the gobblers runs off and they say, let him go. And he, like, goes and they get that one gobbler. And then at the end, you have one of the spy flies get away and come back, and they still have one card to play, right? So this, like, kind of like Easter egg foreshadowing, like, okay, they keep letting one little bit of hints. They're leaving breadcrumbs for Mrs. Coulter, and she keeps following them, and she's going to keep finding them. She's good
at it. Right. I did wonder if the card to play that Mrs. Coulter was discussing was the spy fly or if it was something else.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's clear. I think maybe it is something else because she seemed surprised when the spy fly returned.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And Boreal, by the way, who's not afraid of anything, is like, are you insane?
Yeah. He's like, yo, why are you using these spy flies? You're trying to get us killed?
It just shows what Ma Costa had said in the previous scene, that everybody's afraid of these things. And yeah. I also thought it was interesting that Ma Costa described it as magic. Because when I saw these spy flies, I thought this was technology, for sure. But it's clear that this is not technology. It's some kind of magical device, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I also like, just as an aside, I really like the way that they looked. They don't look particularly scary, but you know that they're not good.
Like little mechanical bugs. Ugh. Like not a fan of the. I'm not a fan of the demon bugs or the mechanical bugs. Neither one. I'm not good with it. But yeah, no. I love the way this all went. I mean, I want to talk about like the big moment in this scene too of her finally getting some traction out of how to read the alethiometer, like showing trusting that moment of I'm gonna trust this person, and Fata Coram saying, yeah, this is how you do it. I haven't seen those, but you're not gonna be able to do that without a book and reading the symbols. And then her like kind of like shushing Pan, like, listen, no, I'm gonna read this thing, kind of pushing him to the side, and then you better empty your mind again. And she empties her mind and she's able to do it. And she kind of knows that Benjamin's dead and tries to tell him. And he's kind of like, no, whatever, sure, what are you talking about? Until Tony shows up. And it's like this moment where now the world is kind of interesting because word is gonna spread throughout the Egyptian community that this girl can actually read an alethiometer without being able to look at any books or the symbols or anything else. And I'm looking forward to what that does for the story.
Yeah, me too. I thought that it was great the way that they described, the way that she had, in the previous scene, she had kind of made it work, but she didn't know how to read it. And then she just needed Fata Coram to tell her how to use it. And then it's just able to be, I mean, now she really can use it like it's Siri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like no kidding. Just like
now she knows how to activate it. It was great. This I just thought that the whole the breadcrumbs of the alethiometer have been really well done throughout the whole series because I was getting a little bit annoyed last episode that she still couldn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
Just I know that the name of this the first book is The Golden Compass, but I just was very frustrated by the fact that they were spoiling all kinds of things, including from other books, and this girl's still like, I don't know how to use this device.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that finally she can read it.
Yeah, and I really like, I really like that we're getting a sense into her being special at this point, that we already knew that she was, we already knew kind of that she, you know, in the opening credits of the first episode, they talk about, you know, a prophecy, and we kind of know that, you know, it has some tie to her. But now really starting to see it manifest, like seeing her being able to clear her mind and be able to control this thing that even at Jordan College, they had that big, thick book that Mrs. Coulter is showing the master, and he's all like, I don't have it, it's with Lyra, and he was going through that, the master was going through that book, and still you don't think he totally has full knowledge of how to read that thing, and now here's this little girl who can control it and make some sense of it and actually give them a message based on what she got. That's going to be, I mean, obviously that's the focus of the story, but it's really, really cool to see it manifesting on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, this episode was really good, even though I think this episode was one of the ones, even so there's no huge reveal in this one in terms of what we had in the previous episode, which was big stuff, right? Like Lord Asriel is her father, Boreal can cross worlds, there are other worlds to cross too. I think that this episode was laying more groundwork for future episodes. Obviously, the stuff about Grumman, who I think last week I had said, I need to know more about why he's important to the story.
Yep.
They explained that, but it wasn't in a big moment. It was sort of as an aside. Grumman isn't from their world. Grumman is one of us and crossed into their world perhaps in Alaska. We don't really know what the circumstances were. So I thought that was nice. I don't think that Mrs. Coulter being her mom is a super big reveal, because the way that she reacted last week about Asriel made it pretty clear that she had a bone to pick with him.
Yeah.
And if she
even
just
a side
didn't,
eye, it could have been anybody. Who knows?
Yeah. So I mean, it was fair. I think most watchers at least suspected at that moment that she, if it wasn't fully confirmed, but I like the way that they confirmed it in this episode.
Yep.
So I thought once again, I've been waiting for that moment to be disappointed. They have it in three episodes and I'm still pretty pumped about this series. I think they've been doing a pretty good job of telling the story.
I love the way that I agree. And I love, there's some things that to me, this episode more than any of the other two pulled on my heartstrings a little bit. And there were some very emotional parts in other scenes, but I just love the relationship between Ma Costa and Lyra. And I really love that, like you said, there's a stark contrast to the Egyptian approach to helping this child. They all know the prophecy. Like, it's clear that people know the prophecy. And as the master said, she has to do all this without any knowledge of what she's doing and why she's doing it. And so they're very carefully, like, allowing her to choose her own path while still giving her the tools to think about it. Well, what does it mean to not hate yourself, to love, to be content with what you become, to, like, you know, what does it mean to be an adventurer but also still have, like, this kind of, like, protective streak that Ma Costa shows her, and to still, like, oh, to do something as mundane as cooking but then turn it into a weapon. Oh, like, look at that. You can make it, the fire expand. They're giving her all these life skills without telling her, you know what, there's a prophecy, there's witches that are going to do this. None of that is coming into their conversation, but they're very aware of it and they're helping her without trying to mold her, which is is in stark contrast to her mom.
Right. I mean, I am a little bit worried about the conversation that Father Corum, who I do trust and I think cares for Lyra, and Lord Fa have at the end, just because they're talking about her almost as a weapon again. And it does seem like a lot of the adults in this story care about Lyra mostly for what she can be, not what she is. Mm-hmm. I think Ma Costa is one of the few people who is considering her as a human being. And Ma Costa perhaps is the only adult we're ever going to get that from, really, because she's the same with her own kids, right? Yeah. Billy is always in focus to her. Her main concern is always Billy. Tony is technically an adult by their standards. His demon is settled. And yet she still does not want Tony out there trying to find his brother. She wants to protect him too. She regrets the fact that she wasn't able to protect Lyra all those years ago. And she's dedicated to doing that now. And this is a woman who nobody would ask anything from at this point. She's missing one of her children. Mm-hmm. But she's still dedicated to protecting Lyra. I mean, she is such a wonderful contrast to Mrs. Coulter as a mother figure. She just really is. And I have to say, Father Corum is a wonderful contrast to both Lord Asriel and the Master is a father figure, because he's not giving Lyra all the information that she needs. He's also trying to protect her, but he's giving her more guidance than either of those two previous men would have given her. So it's nice to see the Egyptians take Lyra under their wing and protect her, even though there was that moment where they almost all turned on her. I was like, this is not a great look. Like, are you just going to pull over on the shore and cast this little girl out?
Yeah, your guy. That's him again.
Raymond.
Fucking Raymond. That's it. So anyway, I mean, I think, like, we're at the part where we can talk about, you know, what we liked, what we questioned, what we want to see more of, and close it out.
Okay, what I liked. I mean, I think I talked about what I liked, which is mainly, like, Ma Costa. She's a great character. She's just such a good character in this story. We haven't seen that much of her before this episode, just little snippets. And she is strong, right? She's showing Lyra that a woman's job is not just to be cooking or mothering, but also they develop their own weapons.
Yep.
She is defiant when the police come. they tell her, you know, they're basically like, get out of the way. And she's like, listen, you need to be doing your job, your actual mm-hmm. job, which is looking for my son. And she's very nurturing and she takes care of people around her. I really, really liked her. I have a lot of, my questions are mainly about the North at this point, because they've been really building up the North mm-hmm. and what the mystery of the North and the North's vastness and the witches. And at this point I'm like, I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah.
We got to move. I'm done with London. Let's go North. So that's what I'm looking forward to next week. Just like delving into what is in the North.
Yeah, yeah, we are related, because I'm gonna mirror exactly what you just said. I was like, yes, this is all right. I love Ma Costa. As I said, I just love the character. I loved it in the books. I love that she ties together these two worlds so well for Lyra. I love the mentorship that she provides her along with Fa Decorum, and just helping her to grow as a person on this journey that she's about to embark on. And now what I want to see more of is, I'm ready for the fucking armored bears. Where are they? I need them in my life. Like, I'm ready for the bear. I'm ready for the cowboys. I'm ready for the ballooning. I'm ready for the North. I'm ready. Like, I'm so ready to see it that I can't wait for this episode. Because if we keep moving at the pace that we're moving at, I can't believe we're not going to get to meet all of those people that I just mentioned. And I'm excited for it. I'm here for it. And I can't wait.
Yeah, I just, the preview for next week showed a vastly different world.
Yeah.
That, like, this, the world that we see in the North just seems so different. I mean, it's not a different, I shouldn't use the term world, because in this story, there are different worlds. The North is part of Lyra's world, but it just looks starkly different from what we're used to. There are different types of people. There are these armored bears. There's this, Lyra makes like a comment, basically another moment. We're going to get to see more defiance from her, where she's like, we mm-hmm. need to have an armored bear on our side. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to seeing the North. I do also, I mean, I guess like in my what I questioned, I also said what I'm looking forward to, but I'm also looking forward to knowing more about Grumman's family. This is a mystery that I think they're leaving hanging for a purpose. Let's see where they go with it. You know, I don't want to spoil anything for listeners who haven't read the books. So I'm just going to say that I'm curious to see how far they're going to take the stuff of Grumman's family in this season.
Yeah, 100%. I am too. I'm very interested in that. But man, this was a gutsy move by the showrunners to be like, you know what? We're going to go 3 episodes maybe here without Lee Scoresby, without Yurik Bjornason, without the people who play those roles. I'm like, it's time. It's time to get to the North. It's time to see some of these people. I want to see the witches. I'm ready. I'm super ready. And I think the story is going to really pick up when we get there. If it can go any faster, it's going to really pick up there.
Yeah, I agree. I'm surprised at how compelling they have made this stuff in London, because yeah. I remember when I was reading the books, I was not bored of the stuff in London, but it clearly feels like they're setting something up. It doesn't feel like the main action of the story is happening yet, and so the fact that the show has made the stuff in London feel like the main action is impressive.
It's really good.
I mean, they've been talking about the North since the first episode, but it seemed from what the glimpse of the North that we got when Lord Asriel was there and supposedly found Grumman's skull, which was just a block of ice. But anyway,
this could be Grumman.
The North looks kind of boring, you know, like, you know, it's pretty lights, but it doesn't look particularly interesting. Now they're kind of building it up that there's something up there. The witches certainly will be interesting. And that's where a lot of the main action of this story comes from. I remember when the Golden Compass was being previewed, I'm going to age myself, back in the day, I was already an adult, and just put that out there. But a lot of the trailer was based on what happens in the North. It wasn't based on what happens with Mrs. Coulter. In fact, I seem to remember that was a very small portion of the trailer. So I'm excited to see the North. Let's go. We're ready.
Yeah, we're ready. We're ready for the North. Definitely ready. So I guess that'll wrap it up for today, you know? And we'll, we're so grateful for all of our listeners. And we want you to, you know, tell your friends, subscribe, reach out to us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. So we're going to respond to any questions or feedback or ideas. And, you know, we're in this journey together. Again, like we say in the lead-in, we really want us to feel like a family environment with all you guys joining in with what we're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to hear any feedback. And also, folks, give us reviews in Apple Podcasts. We need the good reviews and the 5-star ratings. If you like what you hear, just take a couple of minutes and go ahead and give us a review and subscribe. So see you next time.
See you next time.